A Wednesday Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 19, 1997, entitled Anguish, Not Anger. The text for the sermon is Luke 19, verse 41 through 48. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
One of the most difficult aspects of following Jesus, I find, is to emulate his spirit, his attitude. I have entitled the meditation this evening, Anguish, Not Anger. And in so doing, I point to the spirit of Jesus, the attitude of Jesus, the demeanor of Jesus, as Jesus reflected the heart of God. At least that's what our Christian perspective claims, that in the face of Jesus, we see into the heart of God. And in the manner and the mode of Jesus, we get a hint of the nature of God, the spirit and the attitude of God. And as I said a moment ago, it seems to me that one of the most difficult aspects in seeking to emulate the way of Jesus, the being of Jesus, is to find that way in which he brought to expression anguish over that which was wrong and did not get caught up in anger, which is finally self-destructive and becomes an agent of even greater harm and simply exacerbates a bad situation. That's the human story, isn't it? Action and reaction. Perhaps a legitimate protest, but then the rising of the defenses on the part of those who are being protested against, and a stalemate or an explosion, and the latter state is worse than the first. That's been repeated over and over and over again between individuals, in society, between nations. The outburst of anger that elicits a response in kind by those who are established and entrenched in power, and consequently brokenness all around. Anger doesn't work. It is only the anguish that is able to expose a situation and stand in solidarity with the darkness. As an expression of deep and genuine compassion that is ultimately able to change a situation. And of course, we find that in Jesus. The passage in Luke that we read follows immediately upon the Palm Sunday entrance that we'll celebrate on this coming Sunday, the entrance into Jerusalem. Luke presents Jesus as the peaceable king. There are no palms in Luke's account of Palm Sunday. Palms had a kind of nationalistic tone quality to them. They would have raised that nationalistic fervor that might have stamped Jesus as coming in revolution. And in some of the Gospels, I think John particularly, there are palms, but not in Luke. Because Luke, as he paints the portrait of Jesus coming to Jerusalem, wants to paint him very clearly as a king of peace. One who comes as the one in whom God would visit this city of peace. And as he comes over the crest of the hill, in the passage that we read a moment ago, he sees the city and he weeps over it. And the weeping of Jesus is a moving example of the deep anguish that he felt as he was about to enter the city to make his final appeal there on behalf of the God of Israel, the God who embraced all and who was concerned about the marginalized of that society, the ones with whom Jesus identifying thereby the eternal God with those in deep need. As he comes, he enters the temple and he cleanses the temple. Luke downplays that a bit. You'll get a stronger cleansing of the temple than some of the other gospel writers. Luke simply states the fact that Jesus makes his protest there. And when I set anguish over against anger, I don't want to deny a rightful place for righteous anger. But it takes an awfully good person to be angry righteously. There is a place for anger. When we are confronted with that which is wrong, we should be angry. And when Jesus saw the temple in the commerce, in the grip of a kind of bureaucratic regime, a kind of organization that had lost its soul and its heart, I'm sure he was angry. And when he saw that which was wrong in the society of his day, when he ran up against the suffering of people, when he ran up against injustice, there was a legitimate anger, and there ought to be in all of us when we see something that is wrong. And we ought not simply to sweep it under the rug or deny it. It needs to be exposed. It needs to be confronted. Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem to confront Jerusalem. He had been teaching and he had been preaching, and now he was coming to the very heart and center of the religious life of his people in order to make his final appeal, and he would confront Jerusalem. But while there is a place for legitimate anger over against that which is wrong, finally, if we would follow the way of Jesus, which is the only way that anything gets changed and transformed, then we must recognize that it is finally anguish and not anger that will make the difference. He wept over the city. This, of course, is written after the destruction of Jerusalem. And so Luke really is saying to his community, probably a decade after Jerusalem was lying in ruins, that in rejecting Jesus, Jerusalem was going the way of the zealots, the revolutionaries. This is actually what happened. In rejecting the claim of Jesus and the call to repentance and to follow the way of Jesus in the mending of creation, Jerusalem got caught up in that movement of the zealots, the revolutionaries, which inevitably resulted in the kind of thing I spoke about a moment ago. Situation gets so bad. There's the uprising. There is the crushing. And there is devastation all around. Jesus was different. He came as a peaceable king. He wept over the city. And he said, if you only knew the time of your visitation. We never seem to catch the moment, do we? I haven't read the last couple of days what's going on in Albania, but there you have the populist uprising, you have the man entrenched in power trying to hold on, using tanks if need be. We've seen it in the Balkans. We saw it nearly a decade ago as that Iron Curtain was folding. There's always that attempt to hold on. Those who are in power, entrenched, established, refusing to acknowledge that the day has passed, that the regime is over. Nonetheless, with more and more hollow sound and more shrill rhetoric, claiming that it is business as usual, when anybody with an ounce of perception can see that it's over, but whether it be in bureaucratic structures, political parties, or ecclesiastical institutions, time and time again, we fail to read the handwriting on the wall. We can't see the signs around us. And we push the situation until finally there is brokenness, explosion, and devastation all around. It's so easy to get caught up in that. Because we are so human. And if there is a legitimate place for anger against that which is wrong, it is also imperative that we are able to own our anger and then to let it go. Because if we don't let it go, we won't effect any significant change. And our own soul will become a cinder, and our heart will be calloused, and there will be no joy in our lives. It is, I think, probably the most difficult, the most difficult aspect of following Jesus. To be able to capture that fine distinction, to confront that which is wrong, but with compassion for those caught up in the situation, to anguish and to identify with to stand with in the pain, even embracing the darkness. This, of course, is what Jesus did. His anguish over Jerusalem was further exemplified in his prayer from the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they're insane, for they don't know what they're doing." No anger, no bitterness, no recrimination. That's almost superhuman, isn't it? That demands grace divine. But that is the spirit and the attitude that must be cultivated by those who would follow the way of Jesus. Because Jesus was a window into the heart of God. And Jesus, I'm sure, had filled his mind and his heart with the Scriptures, Israel's Scriptures. And what he exemplifies in his weeping over Jerusalem had been brought to beautiful expression centuries ago, before, by the prophet Hosea. Israel, disobedient, cantankerous, stubborn. And so the 11th chapter begins with God saying, "You know, I've had enough of you. You're going to go back into Egypt," even though Egypt in this case would be Assyria, who would be the conquering power. "My wrath is going to boil over. The sword will be in your cities. All of the natural consequences of your way of life, which has broken my covenant." And then it's almost as if God stops in the midst of it, as Hosea brings that to expression. And he says, "How can I give you up? How can I give you up? My compassion, my heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm. I cannot give you up. I will not give you up." The God who would legitimately have simply blacked it all out, it says, "I cannot." And then interestingly, the prophet says, as God's spokesperson, "I won't do that because I am God and not human." Acknowledging that that is so human, all too human. And yet to the extent that we would embody that which Jesus embodied as reflective of the heart of God, to that extent, we cannot give way to anger. Confront, stand up, speak up, stand in solidarity with, but out of compassion, not out of offended anger and wrath. I suppose that's a fitting challenge with which to conclude these midweek Lenten services. There's probably nothing more difficult that I could call myself to or you. But, as I said a moment ago, the alternative is to lose our own soul, to lose our own joy, and to be caught up in an anger that will consume and destroy us. Anguish, weeping, feeling deeply, speaking forth, standing up, identifying with, but never, never letting our hearts grow cold, never letting our spirits grow bitter, never submitting to the cynicism which cuts the soul out of life. I'm not always successful. How about you? But it is the way of Jesus, just as Jesus was a reflection, a mirror of the heart of God. And therefore, the one who continues to beckon us in the anguish to forswear the anger by God's grace.